You're listening to the Youth Crit Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
My name's Wade Watts. My dad picked that name because it sounded like a superhero's alter ego, like Peter Parker or Bruce Banner. But he died when I was a kid, my mom too. And I ended up here, sitting here in my tiny corner of nowhere. There's nowhere left to go. Nowhere. Except the Oasis.
Welcome to the Youth Critic Podcast. I'm your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Andy Comer.
How's it going?
And later on in the show, we will have Gene from the Waffle Press and maybe a couple other people. I'm not sure yet, but when we get to the guests, we'll have a clearer picture of who's here. It'll be surprise podcast. So today, me and Andy are going to be discussing Steven Spielberg's newest film, Ready Player One, based off the book Ready Player One by Ernest Cline. Andy, what did you think of Ready Player One?
Going into it, I was kind of getting excited because of, you know, the word of mouth from South By, and I had heard about the 3D being really top-notch and everything like that, so I was kind of getting excited for it, and when I actually did see it, it just was even better than I had expected. It definitely exceeded my expectations, because I, up until last month, had kind of low expectations. And I know that sounds really bad because, you know, everyone's like, oh, it's Spielberg, you have to have faith in the beard, blah, 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 stuff. But, like, I honestly haven't cared for much of Spielberg's work in the last couple years. Like, I can't think of anything that really stands out. It's nothing against him. It's just that he produces so much that, like, and it's such diverse stuff. Like, props to him, but it's not going to hit everybody. So, I wasn't too, that didn't really impact me too much, but I knew the possibility was there, and he definitely nailed this one.
Yeah, the thing about Spielberg is I've liked his more serious adult Oscar fare. Like, I still genuinely love The Post and Bridge of Spies, but when it comes to, like, his blockbuster studio populist films, I don't think he's done a great one since Jurassic Park. Like, I don't like Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of Crystal Skull at all. I think Minority Report and War for the Worlds are kind of too depressing to be considered studio populist, you know, broad entertainment. And I think
You said since Jurassic Park?
Yes.
You didn't like Saving Private Ryan or Catch Me If You Can?
I mean, do those count as blockbusters?
That's fair, I guess. Saving Private Ryan would be closer. I thought you just meant, like, directorial, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, like, fun popcorn rides, I guess.
Yeah,
gotcha. And, yeah, and Spielberg's done some since Jurassic Park. I mean, Lost World, 1010, Indiana Jones, like I said, and, what was the BFG? But I don't think any of those are anywhere near the caliber of greatness like Jurassic Park or the Indiana Jones trilogy or Jaws or E.T. I don't think any of those have reached the caliber, you know, since then. And I don't think they've gotten really that close. So I was in my hype for this, I was kind of excited because this is a great way for Spielberg to kind of get back into the popcorn film. But my greatest fear too was that Spielberg would downplay a lot of the social commentary that was in the book. A lot of what Ernest Cline wanted to say through the Oasis and what he wanted to say about the sociopolitical side of the Oasis and what he wanted to say about how humanity has gone too far into wanting too much escapism. And while I think I think Spielberg has made a fun popcorn movie, like this is like almost every set piece in this movie is extremely fun and fun to watch. And we'll get to the best one in the movie in the spoilers territory. But for me, I feel like Spielberg downplayed too much of the social commentary from the book. And while I know some people didn't really like the social commentary in the book, and my opinion on the commentary itself is it's not very well written or well structured in the way it's presented. And because Ernest Cline does so much in the first quarter of like 80s nostalgia, like, you know, like, I hate to use this word, but masturbatory. Like he basically just goes off on all these 80s references just to describe the world. It just comes off as masturbatory. So when you get to the second quarter and the third quarter where it's serious and where it's more of a deconstruction of how entertainment and escapism can also be terrible for you, it's tonal whiplash. But in terms of the movie, it just got rid of it rather than just try and fix it or pick one side or the other. So with that said, I think Ready Player One, it's a fun movie to watch. I think it's very much worth the time, very much worth the price of admission. I just wish, as a book reader, they had kept either the social commentary from the book or had some more to say about the Oasis. But then again, you know, having King Kong, you know, throw cars in a car chase while also having the Rexy chase the DeLorean, that's kind of fun to watch. That's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So without going into spoilers, what were things, key points that you liked about the movie?
I liked, you know, all of basically every character, even though I guess you only get to really know him, but like I enjoyed what you did get to know about the others. Like, honestly, you don't get to know much about anybody besides the main character. They don't dive much into even Artemis or H. The other two that are in the top five, like they get named and then, you know, they just like do cool stuff and they're like backup support, but you know literally nothing about them. You don't really know anything about the villain besides the fact that he just wants to, he wants to win the thing, or needs to win the thing just so that his company can take over and then they would be like make all this money. Like, it's not a deep film character wise at all. And that's like my biggest criticism about it. But like, it's like you said, it's a ride. It's like you're just along for the ride and you just interact with the world, both the real world and the Oasis, and you just have fun with it. And that's the best thing about it. I had a blast at this movie. I've seen it 3 times now, and I love just like eyeing around the corners of the screen, just looking for any little other reference that I haven't noticed yet before.
Yeah, I've only seen it once. I plan to see it again because I still had a fun ride. I had a great time. Just been very busy. That's kind of the fun. That's kind of the other issue as well. And the book doesn't describe the other characters as much either. Like if we can, but if we're going on the movie alone, I think you get enough of Samantha, who's Artemis. And, you don't get much of H or Sho or, who's the other character? Or Dato. You don't get any of them. So you're kind of, and then of course Sorrento, his whole goal is I just want to I want to basically be Bob Iger. I have to make my, make these grand deals just so my company can be the biggest company in the world. That's really all that there is. That's all the deepness that you're going to get. And you're just going to get, and the only bit of biting commentary is that when Sorrento is at the board meeting and he's like, once we have control of the Oasis, we can put up to 80%, we can obscure the screen 80% without giving everyone a seizure. We can do that. And, and that's really that's the only bit we get. We don't get much. The only two characters that really get developed that much are Wade and Halliday. Those are the two characters we get. And that's where the story becomes, in going into Halliday's journey, it becomes more of Halliday trying to use the game to teach a lesson to younger generations to not follow the path that he took. The path he took in terms of how he handled the Oasis and how he handled success. And I think that's the heart of the movie. And that's me not going into non-spoilers, is that the heart of the movie is an older person trying to use something of his own creation to teach younger generations or the next generations going forward.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. So with that, do you want to check in on our other guests and then we'll go into spoilers?
Sounds good.
All right.
A whole virtual universe. Take you on a trip around the world and back. People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do. And you won't have to really sit still. But they stay because of all the things they can be.
Can you feel this?
Let me show you the world.
Yeah.
It's the only place that feels like I mean anything. The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg. The first person to find the egg will inherit $500 billion and total control of the Oasis itself.
Who is this Parzival, and how the hell is he winning?
Find him.
This isn't just a game. I'm talking about actual life and death stuff.
The Oasis, the world's most important economic resource.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Kiel Smith. Joining me today is Gina Versa.
Hello, how are you doing?
And today, we're talking Ready Player One. And before we get started, Gene, what were your thoughts on the movie?
I was very enjoyed by the whole experience. I felt it was a fun popcorn film. I was pleasantly surprised that, surprised. I was very happy that Spielberg still has it. He could still make blockbuster fare. His films, I think we were talking about this earlier, like BFG, they weren't really blockbusters, but it was a big budget film, but they weren't like for the masses you described it as.
BFG and Tintin are more studio broad populist films. They're just, they're just not like as exciting. What I mean by they weren't as exciting as something like Jurassic Park or the Indiana Jones trilogy or Jaws. They're not on that like caliber of equality, in my opinion.
Okay, yeah, I definitely agree. And, like, they're kind of kids' films as well.
Well, sure, but still, kid movies, kid movies can be really good, as we've seen.
Okay.
Kid movies can still work. So, but yeah,
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I felt some of the changes he made were better than the book. It was a film that exceeded its source material, and it's a Spielberg movie, so, you know, either way, I was happy. Just seeing it. So, yeah. Missed him doing the blockbusters, since you haven't seen that since, like, Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way Ready Player One, I'm going to get super, super picky, because I know on this podcast I have been, you know, just like praying, hoping, or praising the Ready Player One trailers and just being like, Spielberg's going to come back. He's going to make a studio broad populist film that's going to wow everybody. And, and you know, all those haters, they're going to just turn when they see it. It's going to be glorious.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, sometimes, yeah, sometimes you can change people's opinions.
Yeah.
With them going into a particular mindset in the film.
Yeah.
But, yeah, sorry, I interrupted you.
No, but the way I look at Ready Player One is it's really good. It's still not great. And as someone who also read the book as well, I'm still trying to decide in my mind if it was a mistake if I read the book before the movie, or if I, like, if I should have waited to have read the book till after I saw the movie. I don't, like, I'm trying to think if my like what I loved about the book is clouding my enjoyment for Ready Player One, because Ready Player One, you're right, it is a fun popcorn movie. It's exciting. It's, you know, vibrant. The Oasis is beautiful to look at. And then, of course, when we get to the real world of Columbus, Ohio in 2044, I think, or 45, when we get to the future of Columbus, Ohio, it, you know, it's, of course, like, it's, you know, the colors are drained. It looks very industrial. It looks like kind of very saturated and miserable to look at. And of course, the Oasis is vibrant and colorful, and I fell in love with the Oasis, the way it looked, especially that nightclub scene they go to. I thought that was beautiful, very well done, and I thought even some of the puzzles they did were very well done. I thought they were a lot of fun.
Yeah, I felt in some instances they were better in the book, because, you know, I was talking to my friend last night where it's just like, who wants to see someone spew lines from War Games? And I like War Games. That's a fun 80s film that doesn't get enough credit on its viewpoints on nuclear war. But, you know, it had to be, you know, they had to change some stuff, because, you know, obviously it wouldn't have translated the film. And the recreation of a certain film, oh, I love that scene. That was pretty cool.
I know. It's,
I won't say what.
I mean, we'll get to it in just, we'll get into a little spoilers of it in just a minute. But yeah, the second Easter egg is, or the way they, the search for the second Easter egg in this movie is a lot of fun. Very well done. It's a nice little tip of the hat to one of Spielberg's former friends.
It was playing in his friend's backyard. That's what I heard.
Yeah, it's I really love the cast. I thought Olivia Cooke stood out as Samantha. Mark Rylance did a really good job playing, you know, the Highland that I knew from the book, because Holiday, because Holiday is supposed to be very awkward, very kind of, you know, to himself, very autistic as it's described in the book. And
he's like an eccentric Howard Hughes type.
Mm-hmm. And I thought he did Mark Rylance just doing another really good job of bringing that to life. And I liked the two actors that played Daito and Sho, Philip Zhao, and Win Moreski. Excuse me for butchering that. I'm sorry. And I really, I just like the little bits of cast members that came in. Lena Waithe. Is it Lena Waithe? Or Lena Waithe?
I believe so. Yeah.
She brought some really good. She brought the really good comic relief. It's overall, I thought the cast did a very good job. Ben Mendelsohn is, of course, Ben Mendelsohn.
Right. I did like Ben Mendelsohn. I was going to say for Mark Rylance, I really like the duality of his real life persona and like his online persona, where you know that's kind of. You wonder some of that about yourself when you're online, like it's a more exaggerated version of yourself or it's a different side of your personality. So I thought that was a really interesting take he had on the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was all interesting because, I mean, it's funny that he, of course, makes himself as this big, grand old Gandalf-like wizard. Mm-hmm. But in personal life, he's just kind of a nerd, kind of a, kind of keep to himself nerd.
He's lacking in social skills, social interaction. So,
I thought really Halliday actually had probably the most gravitas because he kind of represents the most of what Oasis it can be for everyone that's in it, because he can allow himself to be Anarch, this grand old fearless wizard, but in real life he doesn't even have the courage to talk to the woman that he loves. Mm-hmm. So it all goes into the main idea of the movie, which is how do we want to see ourselves in real world versus how we really are.
Yeah.
So, and I thought those were really interesting. If I had to pick a issue with the movie, it's that, and look, yes, I understand things have to change in the book. Like I'm not oblivious to that. But my biggest gripe with the movie is that it downplayed a lot of the social commentary that was in the book, even though it was written in a very weird way. Like, it's still like the social commentary of how the internet has basically consumed everybody is really downplayed.
Yeah. I mean, it is a bit. You could still see it in small subtler ways where, you know, the opening just has people kind of consumed by the Oasis in that opening sequence at the jump. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, people are just getting pizza delivered and they're just going back in their home. And you kind of see that in the end where everyone's just glued to the monitor to see the outcome of the match. Mm-hmm. I would say you saw that in some ways, but definitely not as much as you did in the book, for sure.
Yeah, and
because there are good and bad things of the Oasis. I mean, you see that in the book with H's character, you know, where her mom is able to like bypass her social class and have like a better job by changing her avatar. Giving a certain appearance, and you saw that in H. But you know, there are also bad things about the Oasis, where you know people are being consumed. So
yeah,
I don't know. You yeah,
yeah. I mean, well, it just takes over their lives, and it takes precedence in taking away the responsibility. I mean, the movie does in. The narration from Wade, it does explain that it basically was, everyone just kind of left the problem because it got too complicated. And that's what the Oasis did. It gave everyone
an out rather than trying to solve the issue. The issues at hand, you know, which did ultimately become the kind of uprising of one of Iowa, or and it became, and it led to all these loyalty centers where people just got basically indebted like credit, like you would with credit card debt, and now they have to work, you know, there to pay it off, and it's all these really good And in the book, it really does tap into that, into how, like, you know, it's great that, you know, how awesome the Oasis is. And but then, you know, loses itself. But then it shows, like, kind of like the nastiness when, you know, when Wade goes more into like his own self-isolation. Right. And you just, you can either feel sorry or you can feel like this is, or this is disgusting. For me, I look at it as I feel terrible for the characters in the book because they have allowed, you know, this to happen. They've allowed the Oasis to basically take over their normal functions of life. So, but yeah, and I thought that was just downplayed a little too much here. Cause the Oasis, it's pretty much is, it's all fun and games, you know, it's all fun. We're having fun. And isn't it fun? And I felt like that was kind of lost in translation or in adaptation. And that's really my only gripe with the movie. Cause other than that, it's a fun movie. I thought all the action was well done. And I thought overall it handled all the new stuff worked really well, seamlessly into the movie. And much like Spielberg's other adaptations to his work, you can kind of look at both the movie and the book as separate things. So
yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt some things were lost in translation, but I mean, they were still like hinted at enough. Again, you know, it is a fun film, but there are serious undertones though, like social class, you know, social disparity based on like, you know, wealth and, you know, the way, you know, the poor being mistreated by the rich and the gaps, you know, a gap between them. So, I mean, it's hinted at, I will say that.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I wish it was more than just hinted at. So, So do you want to get into spoilers on Ready Player One? Mm-hmm. So I love when they go into the Overlook Hotel.
Oh yeah. That was, I love that scene. Cause you know, the CGI was such the visual effects were so seamless and recreate, making that scene like, trying to think of, a proper, terminology for this, like went back in time, I guess.
Yeah, it's seamless how it even looks very much like, it looks so much like the movie. I almost thought for a minute they took like B-roll footage of Kubrick's film and just had the characters walk through it.
Right.
Like, I thought for a while that was the case because of course, you know, Kubrick shot so much footage for that movie that, like, why wouldn't Warner Brothers just have that lying around that Spielberg could use? But no, they digitally recreated everything, and it looks fantastic. And
I think the ways in which he pushed visual effects in this film, really, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for being a pioneer of, you know, his craft and his form.
Because I mean, Spielberg always is a technical person. He always has pushed technology. And you've seen that in most of the blockbusters he's done. And in this one, like, he really does push mocap technology here to its full.
Right.
To its
and full potential. You saw that in Tintin. You saw that in Jurassic Park. Mm-hmm. BFG, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it. And even Jaws with the mechanical shark.
Right, yeah.
But
not in film in the ocean.
Don't ever film in the ocean, Gene. It's a terrible mistake. Film in a lake.
No, I would film in a tank. I would not. Yeah, that's dumb.
Yeah. He was 20 something. He was like in his late 20s. He lived and learned.
Yeah.
I think he did well for himself.
Yeah.
He recovered quite well.
Yeah, he made a couple of good moves.
Yeah, just only a couple.
Yeah.
Just like one every day, like one or two every decade. Just only like, yeah. we kid, but yeah, and that's really, and it's also an incredible scene because it's a moment for where you kind of see how much, where Artemis kind of sees how much, you know, the character of this female character, this kind of female love interest, what it meant to Halliday, and she has empathy for him. She has empathy that, you know, that he was afraid.
Right.
And of course you know, she's talking to basically an AI version of Halliday. So, there is a real sadness.
Some development in there.
Mm-hmm. I thought genuinely, you know, I thought that was the most fun scene. I mean, obviously the kind of nightclub scene and the Oasis was really well done with the, you know, them floating and dancing. And then the action scene that, you know, comes up. I thought that was really good, especially with the Zemeckis cube.
That was maybe the only change I didn't like from the book was the, I still like the nightclub scene, but the choice of music, it kind of bugged me because in the book it's James Brown is dead, which is a really fun beat. And time after time as he gets his heart broken. So, you know, I wish they could have used that, but it's what it is.
It's still a good song. They use Health from Blue Monday. So,
Blue Monday, yeah,
it's a good song. Just that Spielberg was watching the Atomic Blonde trailer.
Oh, for sure. He probably did.
Yeah.
It's a good trailer.
It is. And it also leads to one question I have for you, which is, what do you think of T.J. Miller in this movie?
Sorry, what was that?
What do you think of T.J. Miller in this movie?
It did bug me a lot that he was in there. It did kind of bug me. Where a lot of the scenes did feel uncomfortable, knowing he's, you know, sexual harasser and, you know, transphobe. And there was, it was hard to see his scenes. I mean, in the back of my head, you know, fuck this guy. It did make me a little uneasy seeing him in the film.
And
it's going to suck seeing Deadpool too, as well.
It's not too late, Fox. Get Christopher Plummer in there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that would totally work for that film, but yeah.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I said that if you had Christopher Plummer too, that would work with Deadpool, you know, being the zany guy.
Yeah, and they could make a joke. They could just explain it in a joke. Like, that's the thing about Deadpool is that you can pretty much interchange anything and just explain it all in a joke.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and no one would care. No one would bother. Because it's Deadpool. Yeah. Hey, Fox, if you're listening, it's not too late. You still got like 7 more weeks.
Yeah.
Regarding T.J. Miller for me, I mean, he is a villain, so you're supposed to hate him. But still, it was like, as I was thinking about it, I'm like, yes, Spielberg, since you don't really show Miller in real life at all, why not just replace the voice?
Yeah, I mean, he could have done that.
Like, you know, like, why not just replace the voice with, like, Thomas Middleditch or Kamal Nanjiani or something?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's, you know, stuff we don't know about the production, and, you know, it's just all speculation, but...
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, that would have been that would have made the viewing experience a bit better for me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And you never know. I mean, Spielberg probably just, I mean, he probably just ran out of time, because we have to also keep in mind, like, 2 or 3 months ago, he just finished The Post, so which was a 9-month ambitious endeavor. So, I mean, you never. It could have been just, like, you know, too late to do anything.
You know, his character is impeccable, and you know, it's someone that donates to charity and, you know, tries to make a world a better place outside of his home. So, you know, again, you know, it's all speculation at this point,
right? But yeah, that's whatever. And I wanted to ask you, because the, like, really, they pretty much got a lot of the first half of the movie, or first half of the book, in adapting it into the movie. So, did the change of them going from the war game / like Indiana Jones style first Easter egg hunt to the race, did that really impact you at all? For me, it's a fun race scene, but I have one thing about it. But go ahead, Gene.
Yeah, it was maybe just a little bit jarring, but, you know, pacing-wise, I felt it was the best way to introduce the world and the characters in it with an action set piece. So, yeah, that was a good move by Spielberg with his part. So I have no problems about it.
Yeah, I don't have that many issues. What I liked about the Ready Player One, when we first meet Wade, is that he's kind of scrappy. He kind of has to, like, scrape for everything that he has, mm-hmm. like even the parts of the Oasis he needs.
Right. Like,
and here it's very easy for him to get coins. Like, he just has to mm-hmm. open the DeLorean and just, like, collect the coins as they come in, and he just takes away some of the tension, but I still thought the opening was really well, in that it's really good, efficient visual storytelling, in that, you know, we're seeing how the world of Oasis works. We're seeing kind of the possibilities with the race, in that we see, you know, the DeLorean, we see Kong, we see the T-Rex, we see the wrecking balls, we see, am I missing anything important?
That was a dinosaur from Jurassic Park.
I think it was a T-Rex.
Yeah,
it was Rexy,
I think her name is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought, you know, it's a really good way to start the film. And actually, after the movie gets going, it does, like, have its own pace, and we get into the characters a little bit more, and it's interesting. So yeah, I thought overall Ready Player One was a fun movie. I did find it odd that they kept so little of the book, because they changed a lot. And,
yeah, they did.
But still, I thought.
Yeah, that's a Spielberg thing to do, though, to pretty much throw out the book.
Right.
Multiple occasions.
Yeah, but other than that, I don't have much to complain. I think, I mean, I still have gripes of how the social commentary is downplayed, but other than that, I still would recommend this movie. This is a fun movie to watch. And did you see this movie in 3D?
I didn't see it in 3D. There's very few films I actually see in 3D.
Okay, because I heard that the studio was pushing the 3D a bit on this movie. So, yeah. But yeah, I didn't see it in 3D either. I saw it traditional. But yeah, it's a fun movie. So do we have do you have any more things to talk about with Ready Player One?
Trying to think. Again, the visual effects and just the pacing is a well done film.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I really wish John Williams could have came back, because I feel Alan Silvestri did a serviceable job, but it was good enough, but I would like him to reunite with John Williams in the not too distant future.
And I think he will. Unless something happens between now and Indiana Jones 5.
He has to come back for Indiana Jones, because, you know, he has to.
Right. I mean, what I mean by that is, John Williams is just getting older. And right. So,
I mean, he's retiring from Star Wars, which is understandable, because mm-hmm. beyond that, it's not based in the films he was on. You know, they're going to do a new trilogy, and it goes away from Episode 8 and 7, and the main franchise. So, yeah, that's understandable. But he has to go back to Indiana Jones. It's such an iconic thing for him.
At least for one more round.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, and I think so I think unless something happens, he'll come back. And, I did miss John Williams, and I thought Alan Silvestri just did a basic score.
It felt like an 80s score, like something out of like an 80s adventure film, like Goonies or, I don't know, Goonies or trying to think of something else. Escaping my mind, but, you know, Twilight Zone, the movie, or,
I can't help you here.
Yeah. It felt like a very basic 80s score, so it kind of fit the period.
But yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I just thought it didn't stand out to me. That's all okay. I'll say.
Well, that's fair enough. Yeah. And I will say some of the dialogue got a little clunky in some cases, but that's fine.
It wasn't too much the dialogue as per se, like the narration and exposition. Got like a little overbearing, because we're seeing what's happening in Wade in that moment. And then Wade comes back on to explain more about what's going on in his inner monologue, or him trying to describe what's happening. And it kind of just kind of takes you out of the moment. After he gets like shoved and punched by his like aunt's boyfriend, he goes into this, he's sitting there emotional, kind of, vulnerable, and he goes into this monologue about being named after a superhero.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, I don't know how we transitioned from that, or from abuse to, I was named after, I was named like a superhero identity. Mm-hmm. I don't know how that quite fit. But yeah, it's a good movie, and I'm glad we got it.
Yeah.
So, Gene, if we don't have anything more to say on Ready Player One, do you want to get to your Twitter handles?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Gene9892. Look for the Waffle Press on Twitter. It's the Waffle Press on YouTube and iTunes. Share, subscribe, anyway, if there's something you don't like. So, yeah, there are some interesting podcasts on there and videos. So, reviewing old films, new films, just anything pop culture. So I think your fans would like it, I would hope.
Yes. I think they would.
Yeah. Ask some people to check it out.
Mm-hmm. I think the listeners would love it. And we're, so with that said, we're going to go back to the main cast. Gene, thank you so much for being on the podcast, and we will be back with you very, very soon. I'm sure we'll talk again about some other big movie or some other film sometime soon. All right.
Welcome to the Rebellion, Wade.
Like many of you, I only came here to escape. But I found something much bigger than just myself.
Going into spoiler territory, Andy, what were your favorite moments?
There are two huge standout moments for me in this film. You know, there's like sprinkled stuff throughout, like right after they get the first key, when he goes into the archive and he's like hit by all these fans that want to take a picture with his avatar and everything. And then, Goro comes up, can't come out in public like that anymore. Like he just can't go anywhere. And then like they go in the secret room. And then all of a sudden, like his chest or Goro's chest starts moving, and then all of a sudden, a chest burster comes flying out. And it was just an awesome little nod to Alien that I enjoyed. Another one was during the final battle when they're driving the DeLorean through like everything, all the battle are like asking for ammo because Artemis and him are both out of everything, and then H just throws him, try this little guy, and throws him a Chucky doll, and they throw it out of the car and it kills like five or six people right away, but one of the sixers catch it and yells, it's a fucking Chucky doll, or it's fucking Chucky. And it's just funny because it's like it's just a perfect moment, like, because that's exactly how you'd react if you just caught a Chucky, and he's like has like a butcher knife and he's just laughing maniacally. And it's just a perfect moment because like it's a PG-13 film and it's like literally one of the best F-bombs in a PG-13 movie I've ever seen. And it's just awesome. Those three are the reference standouts, I would say. Or sorry, I didn't even say the third one yet. The best one to me, where I literally, the first time I saw it, I literally just like shouted out, best or my favorite film of 2018 is when the Iron Giant went down in the lava and they like look down and then he's like going, you know, melting in, and then he just does the Terminator 2 thumbs up as his hand goes under. And it was just a perfect moment. Like literally I almost, for that entire final battle, I could just feel my face like radiating an awesome smile of joy, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah I enjoyed, like I said in the spoiler, I enjoyed all the kind of big set pieces. And what I liked about the third act battle was that it was the urgency and what, but also it had kind of the Marvel, you know, type humor. Where just there's an urgency, but there's also an underlining humor to it all. And, yeah, in the Chucky moment, it's fantastic because, Samantha just has it, hands it to Wade, and then throws it out like a grenade, and it just, like, takes out, like, 20 people or 20 avatars. And it's just great. It's that, you know, and it's just that kind of fun. And while all this is happening, it's all to the song We're Not Gonna Take It by Twisted Sister. So it's that kind of level of fun wackiness that is needed in this movie, especially since when you have the Halo guys running, you have Jason Voorhees taking people down, you have the Iron Giant, you have just so much is going on. Like you just have all this stuff going on, and it's just bonkers entertainment, just a bonkers race to stop Sorrento before he gets the final key.
And then talking about the set pieces and such, you know, the film starts right out the gate, you know, him explaining, like coming down to get in the oasis and then explaining it and stuff like that, where he's at. And then right away they get into showing Planet Doom, where like, you know, everybody is just a free for all battle to try to get like an artifact, and then which is used at the end of the film. So you know who won that, and then they go right into the race where they're trying to get the first key. And like you said, or like mentioned a little bit earlier with like the T-Rex and Kong and stuff like that, like all of that stuff is just while you're in there, like you're in, like you're not in the car, you're right behind it, but like you're low enough where you're like in this, like stuff is flying at you. You don't know where you're actually in that. Like the first time going through, you would die instantly because there's so much stuff going on. It is just insanity. It's just crazy to think that you could even get through any of that, but it's just so much fun. And we didn't even mention my favorite overall scene, I guess, is because there's just like so much like cool references, but like my favorite scene is the second key with The Shining.
That's mine too.
They perfectly, like, they just basically took shots from the Shining and then just had these guys walking through it. And it's just the references and like the way that they twist it perfectly to match the story is just so good. Though I will say that like the way that the challenges were in the book, I prefer them, and the fact that they had to go through like more, but anybody that expected them to do all the stuff that they did in the book regarding all the different challenges or the same number of challenges, this would have to be a 2-part movie or at least 4 hours long. Because
Of course
they streamline everything. Like in the book, they have to do a challenge to get the key. And then once they get the key, then they get a clue to where the gate is. Once they figure that out, then they have to go through a challenge to get to the gate. Once they're in the gate, they have to do another challenge to get the clue for the next key. And in this one, you know, they win the race, they get the key and the clue right away for the next key. Like, which, you know, it makes sense for the time constraints because this movie flies by, even though it is over 2 hours. It's just, it's 2:20. So it's a decently long film as it is. And if they added all those challenges, it would easily be 3.5-4 hours. So they had to streamline that stuff, and it made sense to me why they did that and stuff. I enjoy both. I know that a lot of people, or that some people don't enjoy, for the reason that you said earlier and stuff, but like honestly, I just took it for what it was, is a fun ride. I didn't take it too seriously. They did it. I thought that this is a great adaptation.
I think, I agree. If you had went through, if you had went through everything that went on in the book, there's not much ways to have streamlined the book as it is. Like, there's not much ways, because even the book is like a fast read. Like, it's like you can read it in a couple days. Like, it doesn't like stop either. Like, it only stops to to go through Wade's, you know, self-induced isolation. That's really and even then it's like it's still moving the story along. I knew they were going to streamline. Like, I think in the second or second trailer, I got the sense that they were pretty much going to just cut to the chase. They're not going to just do the school stuff. They're not going to do all the stuff that was in the first third of the book. They go through a lot of it. Like, they pretty much get rid of what was in the first third and just add the whole race scene, and then just have the first key and explain the world, how it works, all of it done in 20 minutes. Like, they do all of that, and then they spend the rest of the 2 hours sending everyone on a journey, and then sending everyone on a mission of discovery, where they discover something about themselves through the game itself. They discover a key thing that they need to learn, because Halliday's game is personal. Like it's a fun game, but Halliday invented it to be personal. And what I mean personal is he invented it to where people, or structured it to where people would learn something out of it. He would learn something out of, you know, The Shining and learn something from the final key of it all, or you would learn something from the first key about going backwards, retracing your steps, those kind of things. And I felt like the structure did work. I think the structure of the movie does work. But yeah, it's just a fun ride. And I give Spielberg a lot of props because he really does. He really is the star of this movie because personally, I think Ty Sheridan's a good actor. And I think everyone in the movie is really good. I just don't think his character, I think his character was the weakest in the movie. So to me, I feel like Spielberg is the real star, the MVP of this movie. Because he was the one that got all the, he was the one that could make all the calls to get everyone to sign off on letting all these references in. And he told a visually compelling story, you know, set in the Oasis and made it look beautiful and engaging. So kudos.
Yep, definitely. Mm-hmm. I know that the book, like, for example, like Diego hasn't seen the movie yet because he's waiting for the book to wear off on him because he really didn't like the book at all. But honestly, if you didn't like the book, you should just give this one a try. If you just like, you know, just a balls to the wall adventure, like, you know, like all these popcorn references that you will just like, oh, nice. Nice. Like, literally, I will watch this movie for the rest of my life and probably still see things that I didn't see the first couple of times. Like, there's so much happening in this movie in the background and the details that I will literally enjoy this movie regardless for years to come, just in rewatches, just to like mine for, you know, any other Easter eggs. And I'm sure that eventually they'll come out with something that says, like, they'll like say that there's like an Easter egg or something that hasn't been realized yet, or some reference that hasn't been realized yet. And then they'll probably like have like a competition or something to find that. Because I think that, didn't they say that there's still one Easter egg in Guardians of the Galaxy that no one's gotten yet?
Yes. There's still one egg in Guardians of the Galaxy that no one's found yet.
Yeah. So like, I could see the same thing happening, especially since that's what this,
what
I can definitely see that happening since that's what this movie's about.
Okay. Yeah, well, I mean, that's obvious because there's just so much in each screening. There's just so much to look at. There's so much to where your eye is being directed to that it will be. I mean, you just have to go in and see this a couple times, or even wait on DVD or Blu-ray to buy it and then just catch everything, you know, catch every little nugget that's on the screen. So,
yep.
Yeah. So with that said, since we both like it, do you think there should be a Ready Player 2?
No, this movie does not need a sequel. Unless they want to do something like original, I guess they could do like, sequel, honestly, to this, because it wraps everything up pretty nicely. And I was just thinking for a second, unless I want to do something for each decade, but that would be redundant and would get boring after a while. After the second one, honestly, the second one would be boring, I'm sure, just because it's like, oh, it's doing the same thing as the last one. So yeah, there's no point in doing any sequels or anything else connected with this.
I was thinking this would be one and done. Let's just adapt other Ernie Cline books, because Armada is actually a decent book. Again, you have to get through the first quarter of the book to get over all the references to 80s, 90s military, you know, military movies. So you have to get through that. But after that, it's a great, like, Armada is a really good father and son story. That works very well. And but yeah, I don't know. I heard Ernest Cline talking about doing Ready Player 2 or a sequel to Ready Player 1, and all I can think of is you wrapped it up. Like, there's not much more to the story. There is. I mean, there's nothing the Oasis is in the hands of Wade Watts. It's in the hands of Wade and his friends. And I mean, there's not what would be the pressing threat to the Oasis that would warrant a sequel? That's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would be the plot is like, what is the threat? So do we have any more things to say about Ready Player One?
If you love 80s movies, if you love the book, if you love The Shining, Spielberg, any of these things, just go see it. Even if you're weary or someone told you that it's bad or something, just go see the movie. You'll enjoy it. Totally. But going to, like I said earlier, like they had to streamline a lot of things. It's totally different from the book. There's a lot of, obviously, it's the same overall story, but like it's really different. They change a lot of things. I enjoy both, and I can understand why the changes were made for the movie, because obviously it's a different medium, but yeah, definitely I enjoyed both. Both are enjoyable, so go check them both out.
All right, and I recommend Ready Player One as well. I think I don't think it's Spielberg's best adaptation, because I think, you know, because I think back to Jurassic Park, because if you watch Jurassic Park, it's a fun blockbuster popcorn movie, but there's still this underlining of corporations trying to place their bets on nature, and of course nature does everything goes against that order, and Spielberg, you know, translates that well from the book to the movie. So I think, I think by downplaying the commentary a bit does weaken the story, or weakens the punch of Ready Player One. But I think by focusing more on what Halliday wanted the game to be does make the movie worthwhile on top of the set pieces, the really good performances, and everything else that we have talked about that we have loved of the movie. So, with that, I highly recommend it. And please check out Ready Player One. Andy, where can the good people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at The Talking Can. Usually tweeting about movies or random things that annoy me about film goers or stuff like that. Just follow me and let's have a chat.
Awesome. You can find me on Twitter at MovieKale. You can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KG Network. And also you can follow the Youth Critic show on Twitter at the Youth Critic. Thanks, everyone. We will be back with you next week or very soon with A Quiet Place and Rampage. Hooray. All right.
Something much bigger than just myself. Are you willing to fight?
Help us save the Oasis.